Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, February 9th, 2017. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Heart Disease Myths Can Mislead Those in Need of Healthy Lifestyles, by Donette Beckett, H&R staff writer. Decatur. Heart problems run in Lee Taylor's family. All but one of her siblings has had a heart procedure or surgery. My father died of a heart attack, and my older sister died as well, she said. Even after the death of her relatives, Taylor still hadn't changed any of her lifestyle. She thought she was doing what she needed to do. She tried to fit exercise into her day. She liked fruits, so she believed she was eating plenty. I just went about my business, she said. Then, one weekend, after a particularly stressful holiday season, Taylor began to have shortness of breath. The symptom worsened within a couple of days. There was no pain or any other symptoms, she said. Her husband took her to the emergency room, only to be wheeled into surgery shortly afterward. On January 9, 2009, Taylor had heart bypass surgery. 1 year later, she needed a stent inserted into a clogged artery to open a passage. After her surgeries, she took her health more seriously. Taylor, 70, began to exercise regularly at the DMH Heart and Lung Center. And I don't eat any red meat. I eat a lot more fruits and vegetables, she said. But I never thought I ate bad. Like many heart patients, Taylor was unaware of her potential for medical problems. Cardiologists find many patients are uninformed of the potential for a heart attack. Interventional cardiologist Dr. Tansel Turgut has often met patients in the emergency room with what appears to be a simple ailment, such as a sore throat. They may not be classical symptoms, he said. What is important is if they feel something is wrong. According to Turgut, men often show typical symptoms, such as numbness in the arm, tightness in the chest, and shortness of breath. On the other hand, women normally have atypical symptoms. Rarely do they feel a heavy pain in the chest. They may have an upset stomach or a pain in their jaw or teeth. Turgut suggests the patient immediately visit the emergency room. Men are often resistant to go. But the ladies don't think it is the heart, he said. Time is very important. After 4 to 6 hours, the muscle dies. According to the American Heart Association, heart disease kills more people than the next three causes of death, including all cancers. It also strikes more women than men. 1 in 3 deaths in women are attributed to heart disease each year. For men, the statistic is 1 in 4 deaths. Many patients do not think they are having a heart attack because they don't believe they're at risk for heart disease. High blood pressure doesn't always manifest itself with symptoms that are readily apparent. AHA statistics address some of the other myths associated with the disease. For example, smoking has a significant impact on the heart, no matter the age. Turgut has also begun to see a rise in heart attacks among patients who use recreational drugs as well. Cocaine can affect the heart, he said, but it is very hard to convince them. Many patients are aware of their family medical history, but feel they can't do anything about it. That's a big myth. According to the AHA, the risk of heart disease can be reduced by 80% if they follow a healthy lifestyle with daily exercise and healthy eating. Turgut monitors patients with basic tests and screenings. He follows their health from details such as habits, lifestyle choices, medical tests, including cholesterol and blood pressure, and family history. Earl Rudolph was aware of his family's history of heart disease. Many close relatives suffered with congestive heart failure. The disease runs in my family, my grandparents, parents, and sister, he said. In September 2016, he began to have shortness of breath. Because of his family history, Rudolph's doctors ran several tests focusing on his heart. At 85 years old, Rudolph was diagnosed with the same heart disease as his relatives. Before his illness, he exercised daily by playing golf, walking, and working out with weights at a local gym. Rudolph was aware of his potential for heart disease and knew what to look for regarding his heart health. After his diagnosis, he continues to exercise, eliminating just one activity. "I quit playing golf," he said. His doctors continue to monitor his health to limit his heart disease progression. "I feel fine," he said, "but I still get short of breath sometimes." Winter back with a vengeance, but not for long. By Teresa Churchill, H&R senior writer. Decatur. The winter we've been experiencing can lull a person into a false sense of security. So, when Autumn and Shannon Comer met downtown for an appointment after work Wednesday, Autumn, 20, didn't have a coat. And her mother-in-law, 48, confessed she'd been forced to clear snow from her car with a sports seat cushion she found in the trunk. "You just never know what you're going to get from day to day," Shannon Comer said. The two Decatur women were not alone. After a high temperature of 63 degrees the day before, Wednesday's snow caught many off guard. Even though Decatur got only about half the 4 inches of snow that fell to the north. Decatur police reported dealing with 9 weather-related accidents, from fender benders to motorists sliding off the road between 1 and 6 p.m., and said road conditions eased after that. Kirk Huddle, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Lincoln, said Wednesday's winter weather advisory covering Logan, DeWitt, and Piatt counties, and other areas north of Interstate 72, was only the second advisory issued during a winter that has had no winter storm warnings. "This is the most snow we've had since December 4th, he said. "Since we really haven't had a lot of snow, compared to what we've had, this snowfall was significant. Huddle added that the greatest danger from the snow was the potential for black ice to form overnight on untreated, lesser-used roads as temperatures rose above freezing Wednesday afternoon before plunging toward a low in the teens at night. Macon County engineer Bruce Bird said 8 trucks went out after lunch to begin pushing snow off county roads. "This stuff's really slick," he said. "The ground is warm, so there's a layer of ice underneath all that heavy, wet snow." Bird said county crews waited until the snowfall began to diminish shortly before 4 p.m. to begin treating roads with salt to avoid pushing it into the ditches. By that time, Macon County Sheriff's deputies were responding to reports of 8 stranded motorists whose vehicles had slid off the road and 5 traffic crashes. Most of the accidents involved property damage only, but one driver complained of neck stiffness and was treated in hospital, according to Lieutenant Jamie Belcher. He said county road conditions had improved by late evening, but deputies on patrol reported that areas in the north and east of the county had patches of snow and ice. "We still urge motorists to use extreme caution," Belcher said Wednesday night. He warned treated roads were likely to refreeze once falling temperatures stopped the chemical reaction of salt from working. Illinois State Police reported that they were working several traffic crashes on Interstate 57 near Rantoul at midday, and later in the afternoon were dealing with numerous crashes in Champaign, Coles, Douglas, and Vermilion counties. A multi-vehicle accident that left several semi-trucks blocking one lane of eastbound Interstate 74 near Mahomet had traffic backed up for hours. Dan Mendenhall, municipal services manager for the city of Decatur, said his crews began salting priority streets when the snow began at 10:30 a.m., before moving on about 3 p.m. to treating hills, curves, and stop signs on side streets. We'll probably have some sort of response continuing until 7:30 a.m. today, he said. Bird said county crews would be back out by 4 a.m. today to make sure roads are safe for morning commuters. Huddle said he did not expect blowing and drifting snow to be a problem, with winds expected to stay right around 10 to 15 miles per hour and diminish overnight. Today's forecast for Decatur is for a high temperature of 25 degrees and sunshine. By Friday, the weather will warm up, and Saturday and Sunday we'll see high temperatures in the 50s. No more blues for Central Park. Decatur. After 16 years, Beth Stringer is looking forward to a summer without worrying about the weather. The Blues in Central Park concert series, produced by Stringer's Decatur magazine, will not return this summer. It's just time for something else, Stringer said. All of the people connected with it kind of came to the same conclusion at the same time. We'll take a year off and then figure out what's next. Introduced in summer 2001, Blues in Central Park brought nationally known blues musicians to Decatur. Among the acts playing the series have been Joe Bonamassa, Ronnie Baker Brooks, Devin Allman, Walter Trout, Kenny Neal, and Anna Popovich. We definitely achieved our goal, Stringer said. Thousands of people attended the free blues concerts every summer, and many were visiting downtown Decatur for the first time. The event had an improbable start, and its longevity was unexpected. We were doing a story list for the magazine in 2000, Stringer said, and we saw that in June and July there was nothing going on. So we decided to fix that. We were only going to do it that one year. But the event's success led to another 15 summers of shows. The first 14 years, the shows were booked by Decatur blues enthusiast Jay Hartman. I got drafted by Beth, he said. She said, "You know some blues artists, right?" I'd been on some blues cruises and seen some people and thought, we've got to get them there. Having our shows on Thursdays worked to our advantage. We could get acts before they'd play a bigger city, as long as we could get the routing right. Hartman considers Bonamassa's appearance to be his crowning achievement. The next year, Hartman said, he was playing London's Royal Albert Hall with Eric Clapton. He played here for free, and now tickets to his concerts are $150. Stringer is relieved to set aside some of her summer anxiety. You know the risks of outdoor concerts, she said. I'm looking forward to spending the summer not worrying about rain and tornadoes. I won't be thinking about whether the sound guy is going to show up or the band. There are so many elements to worry about. This summer will be spent pondering what's next. We still want to bring good entertainment to Decatur, Stringer said, but it's getting more expensive to find good acts all the time. Hartman is pondering possibilities with the planned amphitheater along the Lake Decatur shore. That venue is expected to be hosting shows in 2018. I wouldn't mind putting together something like a one-day blues fest there, Hartman said. Crime and courts. Teen pleads guilty to murder of 21-year-old Kelsey Taylor. By Huey Freeman, H&R staff writer. Daquan Klein, one of four teens charged with first-degree murder in the slaying of 21-year-old Kelsey Taylor in 2015, entered a guilty plea Wednesday morning in Macon County Circuit Court. According to the terms of his plea agreement, Klein will receive 20 years in prison to be served at 100% if he testifies truthfully at any trials that may be held for the other three defendants. Klein, who has been held without bond in the adult jail since he turned 18 on January 27th, had been in juvenile custody since his arrest on September 8, 2015, the day following the slaying of Taylor during an armed robbery. All of the defendants were 16 years old the day they allegedly went to Taylor's North Side apartment, 1450 East Wellington Way, to rob her and her roommate, Brittany N. Wilson, then 20 years old. Brittany Wilson suffered multiple gunshot wounds to her head, abdomen, and legs. If no other trials are scheduled, Klein would still receive the benefit of the plea bargain. If convicted at a trial, the penalty three of the teens are facing is 20 to 60 years in prison, plus a firearm enhancement of 15 years to life. Darian L. Evans, who reportedly confessed to police that he was the shooter, is facing the same base sentence, but his firearm enhancement is 25 years to life for personally discharging a firearm. He told police he shot Taylor one or two times after she cursed at him during the robbery, then shot Wilson an unknown number of times. About 15 family members and supporters of Taylor sat in the courtroom as Klein heard the factual basis of the case against him and responded, "Yes, sir," as Circuit Judge Thomas E. Griffith asked him a series of routine questions as to whether he understood his rights and details of the agreement. He is scheduled to return to court April 4th for his sentencing to be finalized, a date which may be changed to coordinate with the completion of the cases of the other defendants. Klein pleaded guilty to one count of first-degree murder. The original count included the allegation that Klein shot Kesley Taylor with a gun, thereby causing her death. But Klein's attorney, Edwin Pereno of Champaign, successfully argued for the gun passage to be deleted. Pereno acknowledged that it was correct, according to the accountability legal theory, for his client to be charged with murder by participating in a felony connected to the shooting death. But he argued for consideration for Klein, so that he would not be excluded from programs in prison because of his conviction for a gun crime. Assistant State's Attorney Kate Kurtz, presenting the factual basis of the case, said Klein was among several masked intruders who went to Taylor's apartment about 9:15 p.m. September 7th. When police arrived, they found her unresponsive. She was pronounced dead in her home. Police detectives subsequently arrested Shaitan Cook, Klein, Evans, and Ryan O'Neill. During a videotaped police interview, Klein said he and the three other males agreed to rob the women. He told police they forced their way in, Kurtz said. Evans had a gun that caused injuries to Brittany Wilson and Kesley Taylor. All four of the defendants are being tried in adult court because murder is one of the charges mandated under Illinois law for automatic transfers for juveniles who are 16 or 17 years old. O'Neill and Evans, both of whom turned 18 this year, are also being held without bond in the Macon County Jail. Cook is being held in the Peoria County Juvenile Detention Center, pending his July 2nd birthday. Evans has a hearing scheduled for 10:30 today in his case. Cook and O'Neill have pretrial hearings scheduled on February 16th and 23rd, respectively. Macon County plans renewal of Peoria Juvenile Detention Agreement by Ryan Voiles, H&R staff writer, Decatur. Peoria County will likely continue to be the destination for juveniles arrested in Macon County. A plan that would continue to guarantee space for at least 5 Macon County juveniles at the Peoria County Juvenile Detention Center is set for a vote from the full Macon County Board at its regular meeting tonight. Macon County will pay $231,447.22 to cover the costs of the 5 guaranteed beds and for transportation costs for one officer. Each bed is rented at a rate of $126.81 per day. That cost is 3% higher than the prior contract. Peoria County will cover the costs for transporting juveniles between the two counties, though Macon County would have to pay $18 an hour for detainee transports that require a second officer. This is a pretty good deal because Peoria County takes care of the transportation, said Patrick Berter, Macon County Probation Director. The contract is similar to the one that has been in place since 2014. One change that Macon County had been hoping for was an increased number of beds for local juveniles. As Berter said, the county averaged 9 juveniles at a time last year. Under the agreement, Peoria must guarantee space for at least 5 Macon County juveniles, regardless of how full the center is at the time. After it accepts 5 Macon County juveniles, Peoria County is not obligated to accept more. When this situation has arisen in the past, Macon County juveniles would be sent to places like Champaign County. However, Macon County has been solely responsible for transportation costs for sending juveniles to non-Peoria County facilities. Last year, 105 juveniles were detained, up 10 from the previous year. The county board meets at 6 p.m. in room 514 of the Macon County Office Building, 141 South Main Street. Caucus meetings begin at 5:30 p.m. Decatur YMCA celebrates 140 years of service, by Tony Reed, H&R staff writer. Decatur. Joyce Carolus said the Decatur Family YMCA, her chosen temple of fitness, endures because it's so accessible and welcoming. The hours are good, the people are friendly, and the equipment is in good shape, said Carolus, a retiree who lives in Forsyth and works out regularly with a personal trainer. I would think it's going to stay around if they continue to run it as well as they have, she added. The YMCA hosted a Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce after-hours party Wednesday evening to kick off year-long celebrations marking 140 years of sticking around as a well-run institution indispensable to so many families. Created in London in 1844 to improve the health of white Christian men, the YMCA concept soon caught fire globally, and Decatur's version was founded in 1877. In that first year, it attracted 79 members. A century and a half later, it boasts a 9,000-strong membership comprised of men, women, and children in a cultural rainbow of races and creeds. Swimming, fitness classes, basketball courts, childcare, after-school tutoring, exercise equipment, and youth sports are among the myriad offerings at the Y, aimed at serving a diverse community. Matt Whitehead, CEO of the Decatur Family YMCA, told more than 100 guests at Wednesday's party that he likes to think of the tens of thousands of people who have led healthier, happier lives at a place that can do everything from keep them fit and entertained to teach them how to swim and culturally enrich their lives. Speaking to the Herald and Review, he said, "My goal is to make sure we're doing things today that will ensure the YMCA is still here 140 years from now." What does 140 years of history look like? A colorful timeline with dozens of pictures, articles, and interesting facts was unveiled in the YMCA lobby during Wednesday's event. Sponsored by Decatur Memorial Hospital, it stretches for a distance of 24 feet. Natalie Beck, Director of Donor Services for the YMCA, said there are lots of fascinating factoids to learn about the organization and its impact, both locally and nationally. The game of basketball, racquetball, and volleyball, along with the Boy Scouts of America, and even the concept of Father's Day, they all started at a YMCA, Beck said. Everybody gathers at the Y, and that, I think, is the beauty of what we do. 4 Separate Criminal Hearings for Decatur Man, by Huey Freeman, H&R staff writer. Decatur. Alex Fain, a 22-year-old Decatur man, was arraigned Wednesday on 11 criminal counts in connection with 4 unrelated criminal cases for charges including aggravated battery, burglary, criminal damage to property, and resisting arrest. In one of his cases, he is accused of kicking a police detective in the head. In other incidents, he allegedly stole equipment from a Decatur Park District facility and burglarized a Mount Zion resident. A resident reported to police that she was missing a TV and wireless device from the bedroom of her home in the 5700 block of North Cruz Road near Spittler Woods. She said she left for work the morning of January 24th and noticed the items were missing when she returned that afternoon. She reported that she believed her relative was responsible, along with Fain, the relative's acquaintance, said an affidavit by Macon County Sheriff's Deputy David Pittenger. The victim said Fain and her relative had stolen from her in the past, Pittenger wrote in his statement. But the relative shifted blame entirely to Fain for this crime in a message to the victim. Pittenger accompanied the victim to a pawn shop January 31st, where she identified a TV and device as her stolen property. Surveillance video and pawn tickets showed that Fain pawned the items January 24th. When police attempted to take Fain into custody for several charges on January 31st, he attempted to flee as Sheriff's Deputy Jonathan Roseman tried to place him in handcuffs. When he was apprehended and placed in a vehicle for transport to jail, Fain kicked out the siding window of Detective Roseman's patrol vehicle, said a police affidavit. Fain then proceeded to kick Detective Roseman in the back of the head and spit on him. The Decatur Park District reported the loss of 6 batteries from tractors and lawn equipment through a burglary that occurred December 22nd or 23rd at its fleet facility, 2020 North Oakland Avenue. On January 31st, a park police officer received information that Fain had bragged about committing the burglary. When Fain was questioned February 2nd about this incident while in jail, he confessed to crawling under the locked fence after business hours and stealing the 6 batteries. He was then arrested on an additional burglary charge. At the time of his arrest, January 31st, he was wanted by police for failing to appear in court for violating probation in his prior burglary condition. He was convicted May 20th of a felony burglary count for stealing about $17,000 worth of equipment from a park district shed in April. Fain is being held on $50,000 bond pending preliminary hearings February 22nd. Lincoln's birthday. Macon County and state offices, including driver facilities, will be closed Monday, February 13th, in observance of Abraham Lincoln's birthday Sunday. Driver service facilities that are normally open Tuesday through Saturday, such as the one in Decatur, will be closed Saturday, February 11th. The Decatur Public Library will close at 5:30 p.m. Monday in observance of the holiday. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of The Herald and Review for Thursday, February 9th, 2017. Please stay tuned.